This is Tabletop Babble, and I'm Amber. Hello! Today on the show, I sat down with French game designer Colm Martin. We sat down on September 1st and chatted about Colm's preference for narrative games, the need for happier, more hopeful games to help us in these trying times, and of course, his game, Two Summers, a game where players take the role of the same characters at two different time periods, as teenagers in the 1990s and then as adults 30 years later. Think Stephen King's It, but the game doesn't necessarily have to include a scary alien clown. You can check it out on Colm's Itch. That's colmmartin.itch.io, colmmartin.itch.io. Hello, Colm, and welcome to Tabletop Babble. For my listeners, please, would you introduce yourself, tell us your pronouns, and a bit about what you do in the space?
Sure. Well, hi, Amber. Thank you very much for having me. As I was saying just before we started, that's my second ever interview in English. So I'm really excited and also a little fearful, let's say, about what's going to happen, but we'll see. So my name is Colm. I'm French. My pronouns are he and him. So in real life, I'm an English teacher in somewhere near Paris. In my free time, I'm also very much into RPGs, of course. So not only creating, but also playing a lot of it. Maybe too much. I don't know.
I don't know. Is there too much?
Is there too much? I don't know.
maybe if it starts affecting your daily work life and ability to feed yourself. Maybe too much. So I'm interested then, usually what I ask people when I first get to meet them is, you know, how did you get started playing TTRPGs? What's that journey for you?
Well, I actually started quite young. I think I was, I discovered RPGs, I must have been 12 or 13, something like that. So that's more than 20 years ago for me. I think that's very, very long time ago. I think the way that most people come to RPGs, which is someone tells you about it. And it was like, I think it was a friend of my older brother who came in one day saying, hey, there's this cool game that I discovered. I think he began by talking to us a lot about it before we actually sat down and played. And it was in the middle of the 90s. So I don't think that's quite the same games that there were at the time in the English-speaking sphere. And I think the first game I've ever heard about was the James Bond RPG. And for me, that was really cool. Like, oh, you get to play this secret agent, etc. So that's the first thing my first taste of RPGs was, it's a game where you can play James Bond. And for my teenage self, that was very exciting. And so then I began to play mostly with my friends in middle school. That was not very great in hindsight. as it goes, you know, it's like it was a bit the same actually. I went to my friends and I said, hey, there's this cool new game that we can play together. And I think most of them went with it to please me, you know, to they weren't really interested in it. I was maybe too excited about it, but yeah, that was my first experience with it. And then so for, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years, something like that, maybe even longer than that, I really played a lot of mainstream traditional RPGs. My go-to games were Vampire and Call of Cthulhu for a long time. And then around, I would say, 5 or 6 years ago, I discovered Itresb, I think. I don't know how it's pronounced in English. Itresb, maybe. Which is a Norwegian game, initially. Anyway, so a really like niche, strange game where you play, you have surrealistic adventures, and it's diceless. So it was complete opposite of what I was playing at the time. And in, I think, the same month or in the same time, I also discovered a French RPG, which has been translated into English, actually, which is called Inferenza, which was also a GMless game. And so combined together, these two games really blew my mind. Like, wow, there's this new way of playing RPGs. And I think since then, I've not completely turned my back on traditional RPGs, but they really faded into the background. And I discovered this new scene of, not necessarily experimental, but like other ways to play. And other things to play as well, which has I really loved. So that's me as a player, and then as an author, it's much more recent. I started writing games in 4 years ago, and that's thanks to a friend of mine who made me discover Grant Howitt's games, the one pagers that he was doing at the time. I think it was before Honey Heist. I think the game that captured our attention was Genius Loki. I don't know, the one where you can play houses, basically, in a small village, which is really a normal game for Grant Howitt. And so again, that was like that blew my mind. Oh, you can write RPGs with just one page. You don't need 300 pages of background and complicated rules. And so I tried that myself. I for 2 years I wrote monthly RPGs which were like one or two pages, all over the place. Comedy, horror, experimental. It was my first time creating games, so it was really to try to see what could be done. And then last year I wrote Green Dawn Mall. I kickstarted it with the ZineQuest 2020. That was a great experience, and so I did it again this year with Two Summers, also on with the ZineQuest. So it's really, yeah, quite a journey.
Yeah, I mean, it truly is. And for me, what's been nice with Tabletop Babble is that a lot of times I'm getting to meet creators, designers, writers from different cultures, different parts of the world. It always is interesting to me, like, where you get stuff from, like how it happens. Like James, I have never heard of a James Bond RPG. Like, that's not something I ever heard of, because like for us in America, it was a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. It's D&D, or some superhero games that are out, or then Pathfinder became a thing. So I'm interested in knowing what the RPG scene is like in France. So do you guys, like, game stores is a thing? Like, because, like, I'm just completely blind. I've never been. I don't know.
Do you play like dice? Do you?
Yeah. What's up? What's that experience like for you in France?
Well, so game stores, yes, but there's less and less of them as years go by. I don't know if it's the same in I think, as much as I understand, that in the US you guys have a lot of game stores. Yet, I mean, in big cities.
Yes, yeah, we do, yeah.
So I live in Paris, and when I was a teenager, I think there used to be maybe like four or five game stores where you could get RPGs. It was usually RPGs and board games together. And then what happened is that the RPG section of these stores shrank and shrank over the years, and the board games took more space. And then some stores completely disappeared. And so today, I think, I'm not in the loop as much as I used to be, but I think it's only... there's like one that does primarily RPGs and a little, board games on the side, let's say. And the other two remaining stores are mostly board games, and there's like one shelf of RPGs. So yeah, it got harder too, because the market is not that big. It's really, I mean, RPGs in general is a niche hobby. Maybe it's less the case today because it's more well known thanks to the rise of Dungeons and Dragons. But in France, it's like a niche within the niche. It's we play these games that so we have we have some French RPGs. I think it's one of the of the big, there's not that much countries that have, I don't know how to say that, like nationally created RPG in their language.
I see, I see.
And
Yeah.
right. And so France is among those, but it's hard to get them. So most of the buying is done online actually, and in conventions as well. We still have a lot of conventions. Well, we didn't obviously for the past 2 years. There's like I think two or three, I would say, big conventions every year, and then there's smaller ones. So when you're a gamer, you can go. It's in different cities, of course, but there's probably you can probably go to a convention like once every 2 or 3 months. So you we still have those, and it's going to be interesting to see. I'm going to one next month at the beginning of October, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if people are still there, if there's going to be more people because they've missed that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell because it's like this past 2 years, either people have had lots of free time to then play games, or maybe they just became disinterested in it altogether. I think for us in America, we definitely have seen more, like for me at least, from my perspective, I feel like so many people are hungry to play games, like because it's escape, right? It's a
Right.
fun escape. So for you, prior to the pandemic, did you have like a physical gaming group that you got together with? And if so, how did you guys meet each other?
Right. So it's actually interesting because it also evolved with my own evolution of what I played and how I played it. I used to have this kind of informal group of maybe, I don't know, like 10 people, something like that, like friends who I also played RPGs with, and then we would it was really casual, like let's meet at so and so's place and let's play that. For a lot of years it was like this, and then for different reasons the group got it's not that the group got smaller. I think that the games that I liked to play appealed to less people. And so, you know, we went from like, I mean, they're still my friends. I still see them. I just don't play RPGs as much with them as I used to. So one of the really cool things that I have to tell you about is that one of my friends that I met through RPGs, she actually worked in a library, in a bookstore, sorry, in a bookstore. And so we used to go to the bookstore after hours to play our games, which was really cool. And that was our go-to place for lots of years, and then she changed jobs, and so we couldn't do it anymore. And then, you know, actually my habits changed before the pandemic because it's just that life got in the way. You know, some of my friends moved from Paris. Some of them had kids, and so they were less available than before. And so actually, before the pandemic started, I already had the habit of playing online, mostly on I think before Discord, we did Google Hangout for a long time. And so the transition was not really hard. It was actually, yes, not a lot of has changed since then, because we mostly, well, the only thing that has changed is that I used to play, I think last year at the end of 2019, I used to play maybe one game out of 4 or 5 in real life, and now it has been zero for a lot of time, but it's starting again. So it didn't really change. And what's cool is that with this move with I don't know, remote or virtual playing. Is that I got to continue to play with people, you know, who live in other cities. I got to play with people I don't know in real life and who are in other countries, European countries mostly because of the time zone differences. So that was really nice.
So a lot of my brain is spinning right now because like in through all of that it makes me I got ideas and now I got to collect them. I got to remember what I
Yes.
was going to ask. What struck me in all of that is, like, it's so funny you talked about how in Europe and or specifically in France, you already have a niche hobby, and now for you've went even further niche
That's true, yeah.
into more story focused, quote unquote, experimental games. So your friend that worked at the library, were they or was she really on board with the experimental? And then, like, what kind of
Yes.
games were you guys playing?
She actually, I think when I met her, that must have been in 2016, and she, so actually a friend, a mutual friend introduced us, one of my remaining friends from the previous group, let's say it like this. He said like, okay, if you want to try things that are a little outside the norm, I've got some friends who are interested in that. And I think the friend in the book who worked in the bookstore, she was actually she discovered RPGs maybe 1 or 2 years before I met her. So what's interesting is that she didn't have this exposure that I had going through the mainstream phase, let's say, before discovering this new game. So for her, she knew, of course, about Dungeons and Dragons and things like that, but she never played it. So for her, what we played was the norm. So there was no problem of like, oh, this may be too strange. She, with every game, she was like, okay, so how do we play like this? Yeah, let's go. So that was really nice, and I think she was probably more at ease than us in some cases, because that was the first time that she discovered that. So that was really cool.
That is definitely a thing to get over if you played. Like, for me, I played D&D for 7 years, and so when I got exposed to, like, Powered by the Apocalypse games and the fiction first, it was
Right.
very difficult for me. I
Yeah,
was
I can imagine
very
that.
nervous. And so that's I'm glad you found somebody.
And see, for me, it was actually the opposite, because I've only played Dungeons and Dragons once in my life, believe it or not. And that was really hard for me, because it's like, okay, here's this character sheet which looks like you're going to pay your taxes. You have to fill all these boxes, and then there's all these complicated games rules. I mean, that was really, really hard. I mean, I enjoyed my game, but I was like, okay, I can see why people like it. It's just not for me. And but it's probably because I wasn't used to it, because I didn't have, for a lot of years, as I was saying earlier, I didn't have any problem playing Call of Cthulhu and things like that, which are also can also be complicated. And it's even more difficult now. I think I've played so much niche RPGs that when I come back to something more traditional, I'm like, what, there's 2 pages of rules? That's too much. No, give me something more simple. My brain can handle it.
What cracks me up while I'm laughing right now is I'm just trying to imagine, like, a character sheet or Dungeons and Dragons in French. Because for my day job, for what I do for my main source of income, is I work for a company that, like, makes children products as far as, like car seats or strollers, and baby products, right? And we're owned by a Canadian company, and I have to do the translation layout for instruction manuals. And everything is so much longer in
Yes.
French.
I know, right? When I it's the opposite for me when I translate my games into, because I mostly write them in French first. There's a French version of all my games, of course. And so when I translate them into English, I'm like, this is so much simpler. I can fit so much more information.
So when you first had your D&D experience, was it an English experience or was it a French experience? Because I don't know if they get them translated or not.
We get actually D&D is big in France as well. I think again, I'm outside of the mainstream circles, so I don't know how big, but it's definitely big. As it's to give you an example, there was when I think the SRD of the game was released a couple of years ago, and when it was released, there was this big fight between two publishers in France to get to publish their own version of the game. It was very ugly, but
Ooh.
it was, well, as publishing wars usually are. There's a lot of players for that. I think most in this regard, it's like in the US, most players like medieval fantasy games. And so the game I played to answer your question was, I think, the 3.5 edition, and it was in French.
Okay. Whew, and 3.5 was the game I played. That's the edition I played for 7 years, and it was cumbersome as you went. So
That's what experts tell me. Yes, when I say that I only played D&D once and it was a 3.5, they say no, but you've not really played D&D, so it's normal that you didn't like it because this edition is better, etc.
I mean, I liked it, like I definitely think there are certain kinds of people who will be drawn more to D&D just because of how their brain works. I definitely like tracking stuff. I like all that kinds of things. Like when I'm excited to do my taxes because I'm a weirdo. So I can D&D appeals to me in that regards, but I definitely do tend to lean more towards the more rules light storytelling because it isn't as cumbersome to run or to. I just have more brain space for those
Right.
types of games. So I'm interested in knowing what kind of experimental games did you, or what kind of games were you like you loved, you're inspired by? Like you talked about Grant Howe at One Page Games, but was there
Yes.
any sort of game that you tried out and you're like, oh, now I want to create.
Yeah, I guess let me try to, so as we speak, I'm pulling up my digital collection to try to see, because the thing is that as a creator, I read a lot and really a lot of RPGs, and so I tend and I have really bad memory. Okay, well, the game I was telling you before in Florenza was really, I think, my the game where I was like, okay, maybe I can do this too, because for two reasons. First, because, well, the game is great. It's a GMless game where you basically take turns telling the story of people in sort of post-apocalyptic landscape with a lot of dark nature stuff. And I think one of the I don't remember how it translated in English, but the tagline of the game is basically that you get to choose if you're going to play a hero, a martyr, or a bastard, and you play, it's one shot games, and so it's really intense, and I really like that experience when I discovered it, of creating a story as you go, because the big thing in this game is that you start with no character sheet, and each turn that you play, you add one sentence on your character sheet, which is, like a trait that you're going to get to use in the mechanics. But it also teaches you, if I can say it like this, who is your character. And so this concept of discovering a game as you go, play to discover, as they play to find out, as they say in PBTA games, was really interesting for me. And the other thing is that since it was a French game written by an indie creator, I actually got to interact with him, first in writing and then playing with him online and then meeting him. And so I was like, okay, so RPG creators are normal people. No, but you see what I mean? Like, okay,
Yes, I do. I do. I do. I do.
I can do it. Like, he's a nice guy. He's not particularly. It's going to sound like I'm insulting him, but he's not particularly clever. He's not. I mean, I can do it too. You know what I mean? It gave me the confidence to do that. And what's interesting is that I actually realized some years later that I was not the only one to be inspired by his games, and that. That's one of the games that inspired a lot of people to start creating their own stuff. That was really, I think, a big influence for me.
Yeah, who was the designer?
So it's a French designer called Thomas Meunier, and I actually liked the game so much that I translated it into English for him a couple years ago. I think it's on itch.io. It's in English for free on itch.io, Inflorenza. and it's really great. So if you read the game and you think it's terribly written, it's probably because I botched the translation, but trust me, the game is great otherwise.
I really want to experience the magic of Dungeons and Dragons, but I'm a cave hermit who made an oath never to speak to other people again.
And I want to watch a classic fantasy series like Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones, but I can't stand the sight of human faces.
Well, I want to relive the magic of make-believe, the humor of a preschool-aged child, and the genuine camaraderie of nearly 10 years of friendship through only my ears, but I don't know how.
You ignorant fools! You don't even know about Dames and Dragons!
What?
But Dames and Dragons? What's that?
Dames and Dragons is a Dungeons and Dragons actual play podcast!
A podcast? So I can experience the spontaneous group storytelling of D&D without breaking my oath of solitude?
That's right.
And I can take part in a rich fantasy storyline without ever having to lay eyes on a disgusting human face?
Never again will the faces plague you.
And it has a cast of 4 female friends who make constant immature jokes as they play?
Absolutely. I would never lead you astray, my friend. Whether you love D&D or just love a good fantasy tale, Dames and Dragons is the podcast for you. Tells the story of 3 unlikely heroes who are chosen to become guardians of the goddess of their world, a floating island by the name of Estra.
By God, that sounds like something I could get into.
Sounds like something I'd love.
Sounds like something I'd make.
Well, that's just ridiculous. Dames and Dragons, updated every second Monday, wherever podcasts are sold.
So you've got your history, your experience, and you've been inspired, and you've realized RPG creators aren't some unattainable gods. Humans. you can do it as well. You said you did 1 game already, and you did that on Kickstarter, and it was successful. Which one? What was the name of that game again?
Green Dawn Mall. That was last year in February of 2020.
But the one that you reached out to me specifically to talk about today is called 2 Summers.
That's right.
Okay, so let's talk about 2 Summers. First, let's just hear, like, what is 2 Summers, that pitch?
Right, so my one-sentence pitch that I refined over the month is it's like Stephen King's If, but without scary clowns. So basically, the concept of 2 Summers, like the title indicates, is that you play the same characters on 2 different timelines, 30 years apart. You play teenagers in the 1990s. In the country, they're on holidays, everything's great, and they live their daily lives, and they are going to have a sort of adventure, like not a big adventure, like life-changing, but more like the stuff that you're going to talk about for years and years as friends. And then you also play the same characters 30 years later in the 2020s as 40-something people who come back to the same place, also on holiday, and they discover that there's some leftover stuff from their adventure that they have to deal with. And the 2 key conceits of the game is that there's no supernatural stuff in the basic version of the game, and it's more about it's as much about discovering, exploring the relations between the characters and how they evolve over the years, as having an adventure. Basically, I'm really interested in the meeting of those two ideas.
So I'm always interested in, like, where did this seed come from? Was it specifically from, you know, inspired directly from Stephen King's It, or was this something that you were already thinking, like, where did it come from? Exactly.
So yeah, so actually I never once thought about if before I talked about the game with someone and said, oh, it's like if. I was like, yeah, actually it is. But that was not my inspiration. My inspiration was, so what actually happened is that I was contacted by a friend of mine who also writes RPGs, and he wanted to do a kind of starter kit for a French game. I think it's a French game called Nephilim. Something about Temple Kings. I don't know this game at all. It's one of the big, apparently it's one of the big historical games in France that I never got to play. I know the name vaguely. And so he's like, oh, you're the perfect person for it, because I want to write it with someone who doesn't know the game. And I have this idea that you'd play in this starter kit, that you'd play kids who go on holiday at their grandparents in the country, and they explore the country and they discover this Templar history of the in the country, and then they get magic powers, etc. I was like, okay, wait a minute, because this idea is really cool, but what if you remove the Templars and the magic? I think the idea of just your kids in the country, you're on holiday and you get this adventure that it's not, as I said, not that big, but something really cool, basically. I think that's the thing that appealed to me. And then I got to think, and I was like, okay, but there's already some games that do that. And I don't like to repeat, you know, what's already been done. And so then I had this idea to do it on two different timelines, which was something that I had wanted to try for a long time without quite knowing how to do it. And for this game, I don't know why, but it worked, basically. And I think one of the reasons that it worked is that because I removed all I mean, there's still some rules in the games, but there's no rule for going from one timeline to the other. That's probably the only part of the game when there's no, the only rule is if all players agree, we switch to the other timeline. And so that's really interesting, because then in the games that I've played for playtesting the game, I've actually had all sorts of different mixes. I've had games where maybe in for 3 hours we played as teenagers, and then we decided at the very end to explore the adult timeline. I've had the opposite, which was 95% focused on the adults, and then I also had a mix of the two. So I like the fact that because you're free to do it however you like, you can really have different experiences of the game this way.
So this is a personal question. Are you the kind of person who enjoys just like the thinking about memories, making memories, creating memories, and that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. I think. Sorry, do you have a follow up or?
I was gonna say, the reason I'm asking is very pointed. You're talking about your game. I'm like, tell me about you and your memories. Because for me, I think it's a very interesting choice to strip out supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're no magic. We're really focusing on just the interaction of the characters. And this making that memory that big thing. And for me, I love that. I love the beautiful, like beautiful mundaneness or beautiful. There's magic in just this kind of. This is the actual magic. And so that's why I asked the question.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to lie and say that this was deliberate, and or this was in relation with the fact that there was this big pandemic. And I don't think that's really why I did that way. I think there's a part of me that likes to experiment a lot in games, as I've said before. And so it was part of the reason for the game was really a test. Like, okay, can I do it? Like, can it be interesting to have a game about the mundane? I kind of knew it was possible because, of course, I'm not the first one to do it by far. But that was still interesting. And actually, for some people, it was still. I've had some comments from backers or otherwise who were like, okay, but Are you sure we can't do any supernatural stuff? Like, can we still? And so because of that, I actually wrote a supplement to the game, which is going to be published in October, where you have options, you know, to play the game in different styles. And one of the options is like, okay, you want some magic? I can give you magic. I don't want to, you know, I want to everyone to be happy. So, but yeah, initially I didn't want to do that. And I think also, you talk about the mundane. I think there's definitely an element of nostalgia. I don't know how much of a nostalgic person I am, but that's definitely part of how I behave in the world. I think it's also, you know, just getting older. I'm not the age that the adult characters are in the game. I'm kind of in the middle between the teenager and the adults in this game. So it's really like, okay, you know, it's not this game is not a psychoanalysis of me, but I think there's still a part of that, like, okay, the passage of time, basically, you know. Do the choices that you make as a teenager inform who you are as an adult? Like, if you choose something as a teen, is it done? Like, you cannot go back, and you're going to be like this as an adult or not? Can you? You know, I think this element is also interesting, and that's also something I saw in a lot of games. I've saw characters who were really the logical continuation of as adults as who they were as teens, and sometimes it's the total opposite. Like, okay, when I was a teen, I was the perfect student, very calm, etc. And now I'm an adult. I play the guitar in a punk band and something like this. And so that's also a really interesting idea for me, like to explore this kind of bridge between the two periods.
I really enjoy that. I think some of my more fun conversations, or the conversations I like to have, is like thinking about stuff as branching and choices and free will, and do we really get to choose who we're going to be, or do all of our experiences and everything inform what we're going to be like later on? And I love that kind of thought experiment, and so I really, this speaks to me, is what I'm saying. Like, I really like this idea of being, because like for me too, it's like I personally will share this of my real life. Like, I grew up in a home where my father was he had obsessive compulsive disorder, and everything had to be clean all the time,
right?
And I carried that with me for a while into my adult life, but then I said no. And now I'm a very messy person. And I learned to let that go. But it's like, but what if I was a different person, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Would I have just continued on carrying that legacy of what things I've learned? So I think that's really fun. And I really like it. So going back into more of the game mechanics, you said in playtesting, you really don't have, the game isn't set up where you're supposed to have a definite amount of time as kids or a definite amount of time as an adult. You can kind of go back and forth.
Yeah.
Okay. So like in a gameplay session, we would sit down and like at the start, I would say we would all agree that we just want to play as kids to begin with.
That's right. Yeah. That's usually my starting. So I should point out that it's a game made to be played in campaigns. You can play one shots if you want. There's actually a free demo starter kit, demo kit of the game that you can download, where there's a one shot scenario. But I think I say one shot and not one session, because I used to think it was possible in one session, but actually every time I tried, we tended to go longer because we wanted to explore more of these characters. But when we play in campaigns, my usually when I start the game, if I'm GMing, it's going to be okay. Here's what happened last time. Now, which timeline do you want to continue first? And so it's really up to the players. I think that's one of the things I say several times in the book, is that okay, it's a game with a GM, but the GM the GM's role is mostly to kind of think about the adventure, what the characters are going to discover, but then that's between the sessions. And during the session, the GM is there just to facilitate the game and to react to the player's desires. So if they want to play the whole session as teens and you had this whole cool things planned for the adult timeline, well, of course you can tell them, you can say, I would like to explore a little bit of the adult timeline because there's this cool thing for you. I'm not, I'm not saying suffer and be silent, but it's mostly their desires that are front and center. If they want to, if you tell them, oh, do you want to continue the big investigation that you study as adults? And they say, no, we want to play in the teen timeline. And actually, we're going for this whole session, we're going to go to the beach and sing around campfires. That's fine. You know, the game, you can do that in the game too. So you can really choose how you want to start. And then, you know, it's I think actually in one of my playtesting campaigns, I had this problem that I wanted to test some of the adventure side of the games, and my players were really less interested in that. And so at one point they said, you know, the adventure is really cool, but I think we love our characters so much that we see that you are giving us some clues. You want us to, but we're okay just playing day to day lives, and I think I just said, yeah, actually, if that's fine for you, you know, I stopped stressing and I said, okay, you want to do this, that's fine, and we had a great time. So that's, you know, if everyone is enjoying themselves,
it takes a lot of pressure off the GM for figuring out adventure hooks and plotting out stuff,
right.
And that's totally fine. I like that kind of too. I like that talk of like, of, hey, we know that you're doing this, GM, but actually, I think it's better for them to be honest, you know?
Yeah.
It's good. It's good.
It's actually included in the, it's not really a mechanic, but there's this stuff, this thing I stole from, I think it's from, again, from Grant Howitt's Heart, this big game that the companion to Spyro he published a few years ago, where you get to, as a player, you get to select key moments. Between sessions, you can basically tell the GM two things that you'd like to see in the next session. And it can be anything. It can be something involving your character. It can be something about the adventure, about your daily life, about someone else. It can be very vague. It can be very specific. But the idea is to give the GM pointers about what you want to see. And that's actually something that I recommend to do in any game because, as you said, it takes some pressure off the GM because if you know what the players want, if the players themselves know, you know, what I recommend is writing it on a piece of paper, putting it in front of everyone, and then you can play towards this. And that's really, really helpful to... make sure that everyone enjoys themselves. They get their moment that they wanted, and then you can move the spotlight to someone else. That's a really a cool idea that I learned from Grant Howitt, and that I shamelessly stole because it's very good.
This whole industry is just sharing and passing around ideas and getting inspired
right.
by each other. I think it's all fine. So I'm interested then in how interactions go between the players. I do notice on your itch page that there's a talk about tokens.
Yes.
So how does that work?
Right. So it's also Two Summers is also a diceless game, and the currency of the game is tokens. So what happens is that you have two sides to a campaign. You have the adventure, which I already talked about, and then you have your personal concerns. Each character, they get three concerns for each timeline. So three concerns as a teen, three concerns as an adult. And that's three things of your daily life that you have to deal with in some way. Sometimes, well, mostly, I think, if I remember correctly, what I wrote 6 months ago, mostly things that you know, that are imposed on you. Like, okay, I've got this homework to do. I have to have this big talk with my parents that I don't want to have. Or when you're an adult, it's like, okay, I have to fix the car and I have to take my daughter to a bowling alley, even though I don't want to. And so the idea is that as a character, you're going to have to try to balance what you must do in your daily life. That's not necessarily very... it's not that it's not interesting. It's that you don't want to do it because it's hard, basically. Sometimes it also can be, you know, I want to have an open heart conversation with my best friend, and you don't want to do it because it's a hard thing to do. So you will have the temptation to just go on the adventure and focus on all your energy on the adventure because that's much more fun. But the thing is, if you do that, if you focus your energy on the adventure, first of all, your concerns, the GM is encouraged to make your concerns go worse. If you don't have the talk with your parents, at one point they will sit you down and say, okay, you're not going to go out until we have this talk, so that's not going to be fun. And also, you're encouraged to focus on your concerns because you get to win tokens this way. The idea is that every time you play, you frame a scene around one of your concerns, you get you win a token. But the thing is that you win it on the other side of your sheet. So if you address a team concern, you will get an adult token and vice versa. And why do you want tokens? It's because they will help you to to succeed at actions. The idea is that when you want to try to do something difficult or something that you're not going to succeed automatically at, the GM is going to give you a difficulty between 3 and 2 and 4, usually. And to beat this difficulty, you have to answer with as many elements of your character sheet as you can. So you have traits on your sheet that you can try to use for this action. But usually you have 4 traits for each timeline. And usually, you know, for what a given action, you will have only 1 or maybe 2 traits that are applicable. So you need those tokens to spend fully succeed at an action. If you don't have tokens, you can always try. It's always the player who decides if they fail or succeed. But let's say difficulty is 4, you have only 1 threat and 1 token, so you have only 2 things. You can decide to succeed, but if you do so, you will succeed with 2 complications. You will be harmed, you will get someone angry, you will lose something, things like that. So it's really, you know, a cycle. Like you address a personal concern, you get a token, then you can focus on the adventure a little bit. Usually you will get a complication out of an action that you also have to solve. And yes, the idea is that as you go on session to session, your life will get more complicated, is what I'm trying to say. And it really reflects, I think, these two ideas that when you're a teenager, the concerns that you have are not necessarily very big objectively, but for you, it's really big things. And so they will get more and more important for you as time goes on, even if, you know, when you're looking back at them as an adult, you're like, okay, why did I focus on that? And as an adult, it's more like there's this thing that I don't want to focus on. My life shouldn't be about this, but if I don't address it, it's going to get more and more complicated. And of course, what I like to do is confront the adult with the teenage side. And you can do this if you have characters who have children. So, for example, you have the rebellious, the very nice and polite teenager who turned into a rebellious adult. And he has a daughter, for example, and the daughter wants to follow in their step. She's like, oh, I want to be rebellious like you are. And he's like, well, yeah, but not as a teenager, you can't, you know. So you have this interaction as well, which is really interesting. So yeah, that's really fun.
I love all that. I mean, again, nobody can see my facial reaction in podcasting, but I loved when you said, if the adult character has a teenager, use that teenager to confront the adult. That's such a good way to do that. Like, you have to address yourself, and you have to do it. Ah, it's such a good, that's smart. I love it. As you're talking, I was thinking about another game that I've played before that does similar things. Not exactly like what your game is like, but I was wondering if you knew about it. It's called 14 Days with Hannah Schaefer wrote this. It's about migraine management.
Oh, yeah. I read it. I don't have a good recollection of it, but yeah, I know of it.
So I like the idea of, like, you're talking about your concerns. Well, for Hannah Schaefer's 14 Days, it's like, it's whether or not you woke up with a migraine and what intensity level it is, and how intense that migraine is affects how your character can complete their tasks. And I really like that in her game, but also definitely in Two Summers, where you have these concerns that you have to be able to balance with what you care. Because, like, that's something that we deal with as people, right? As real human beings. And I like how well that's reflected in both your mechanic and her mechanic, that's something that we have to learn how to manage. And I like that kind of management. So you don't need dice rolling for that.
Yeah. I should also point out that one of the conceits that I didn't mention before about Two Summers is that it's a sunny game, by which I mean that all of this is very light. And the concerns and the adventure, etc. It's not supposed to, to end in a big tense scene where you have to decide between breaking up with your girlfriend or killing the bad guy. You know, it's really much lighter than this. It can be sad and emotional, of course. But I also wanted to try to see how much it was possible to avoid that, to not make a game around dark or serious topics. Not that I don't like it, but, you know, it didn't seem a right fit for this game. And it turns out that you actually can do completely without it and still have interesting game. That being said, that's also something that has been asked to me by friends. If I want to play with scary clowns, can I? Yes, you can. In the supplements to the game, you will have options to make things as dark as you want, if you like this sort of things.
I'm a fan of there's been some talk in the indie space, like, you have the term grim dark for certain things, and so what's the opposite? And I think I've seen, like, hope bright or hope light, and I like grimdark games. They have their place, but I can't be grimdark all the time. And I also love adorable. Yes. And I would say I really love Two Summers in its pure form. Well, as a hope light.
Thank you. Well, I think that part of the game is definitely informed and influenced by the global situation. When it got time to think about my new game, I think one of my first not ideas, but my first decision was to say, okay, whatever the game is going to be, let's try to make something hopeful and positive, because that's the sort of thing that I personally, that's my thing, is to write games that I would like to play. So I didn't want to play a dark game, and so it's like, okay, let's write something positive.
Hope light, wonderful. So Colm, if people wanted to find you online or find your game and work, where could they do that?
So three places. The first is my itch.io page. If you want to see, all my games are there in French and English. Some are free, some you have to pay for, so you can see what you like. For my full games, you always have the demo versions that are free, so if you want to try them first. I'm also active on Twitter. I'll probably give my pseudonym to my handle to you, and you'll
I'll link it somewhere.
Because it's complicated to spell.
Okay,
and,
okay.
Right, and I also have a Discord server, which is mostly about, again, about my games, It's a place where I talk about what I'm doing, what I will do in the future, prototypes, etc. So that's the three places.
Well, great. Yes. So listeners, I will put everything down into the show notes so that you can get to it. Please check out Two Summers. It looks beautiful. We didn't even talk about the art. It looks so great. It's
I'm so lucky to have had the chance to work with these people, Momatos, who did the cover and some of the inside illustrations, who also wrote this wonderful game called Ark that you should definitely check out, and wonderful people, French people, Yann and Nicolas, who did some of the interior art and layout. They also have a very cool game that also exists in English that's called Sodalitas. Perfect for 1 hour pickup games. Check it out. It's great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hello, it's me, Amber, at the end of the episode. How you doing? I hope you enjoyed the episode. I just want to take a second to say thank you for your patience, as I have been kind of slacking a little bit the last 2 weeks. I've had some personal life stuff come up that's made it hard to have energy or time to take care of podcast needs. But I should be back in order. But I just want to also say thank you to Kristen, that's Kristen Is No Jedi, for picking up the slack a bit and doing a bunch of tabletop crowd interviews. Oh my goodness, there's so many cool games that are coming out that are in crowdfunding. So if you haven't been listening to the tabletop crowd episodes, I wish that you would check them out. I would hope that you would check them out. Please check them out. Oh my gosh. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at Tabletop Babble. You can also find me on Twitter at Rocket Arga, Chris and I just said. And of course, there's Wolfmere, who unfortunately right now we haven't done much together because, as I said, personal life stuff. But hopefully we'll be having some Tabletop Spotlight episodes coming to you all in the future. Also to note, if you like the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. But also, you know what? You can find the entire backlog of Tabletop Babble and Tabletop Crowds, all the tabletop stuff, on YouTube. If YouTube is your preference for listening to shows, which, you know, for me it is for most of the time, other than I also use Spotify, you can also find us there as well. Anyway, I am going too fast. I will see you next episode. Bye.